Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on May 21st, Thursday. And as we get ready for Memorial Day, one of the most important holidays on our calendar, we thought we'd look back at the legacy and the presidency of one of our great wartime presidents, Harry Truman, who, of course, was president of the United States 1945 to 53, our 33rd president, one of the most interesting personalities ever in the White House. And to do that, we've invited to the show Susan Medler, who is director of communications at the library, the Truman Library up in Missouri, and our friend Bill Katz, the author and historian and blogger of Urgent Agenda, one of our very favorite blogs. So the way we're going to do this, we'll be talking to Susan, and then Adriana Boyne will be joining us with a commentary. Adriana, are you there?
Yes, how are you?
Great, welcome. And then, of course, we will finish with Mr. Bill Katz and his impressions of the Truman presidency. So let's say hello to Susan Medler up in Missouri. How are you?
Hi, Silvio. Terrific. Thanks for
inviting
us.
Thank you very much
on.
For joining us. It's a
glad
real,
to be
it's
here.
A real treat to have you. Susan, am I pronouncing your last name correctly?
Yes. Yep.
Medler? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Well, Susan, like a lot of people, I was not born when President Truman was in the White House, so I am one of those who has learned about him through history. But I picked up a great book about 10 years ago, maybe 15 years ago, by David McCullough, the Truman biography. I'm sure you're familiar with it.
Oh, yeah.
And that book, I read that book with such interest. And then Mr. McCullough did a documentary on American Experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I just became fascinated with the Truman presidency, and I'm a big fan of your website. I check it a great deal. And just a couple of weeks ago, I saw the little thing in the newspaper that President Truman would have been 125, and you're running all kinds of programs to celebrate that. And I just thought we would have you on. I know Bill and Katz and I have had in previous shows conversations about Harry Truman as well, and we just thought we talk to you and we learn more about the library and some of the things that the library is doing.
Great.
So how did you get involved with the President Truman Library?
I'm very fortunate to be here. I'm a longtime resident of its hometown, Independence, Missouri, which is just really a short drive from the heart of Kansas City. And I've worked in nonprofit communications for various organizations, and when this opportunity came up, I leapt at it. Living in Independence, it's hard to escape a sense of real importance of Truman's legacy, the ongoing legacy, and that really great sense, too, that our history matters and what happened in the past informs what happens in our future. And I'm really pleased to be part of an institution that I think really strengthens our democracy by helping folks understand a really pivotal era in history that Truman sort of accidentally presided over.
No, you're exactly right. Now, just a quick note for my information. President Truman had one, the Trumans had one daughter, right? Margaret Truman, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, she passed away recently, didn't she?
Yeah, last year, and it was her wish that she be interred here at the courtyard. The Truman Library, and which is a little bit of a misnomer, right? Because people hear Truman Library and they think, oh, it's a public library named after Truman. Where are the books? And rather, it's an archive. It's one of the facilities that's managed by our National Archives. And at the Presidential Library, all of the papers and documents and photographs and artifacts related to his presidency are here, as well as a museum that the Dallas Morning News, actually it was an op-ed piece in the Dallas Morning News, hailed as our nation's best presidential museum. And I think it has earned that praise for its bipartisan approach to that history. As you said, 1948 to the critical years through 52. And
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that period of entering the Cold War and ending World War II and the desegregation of the armed forces, the recognition of Israel, all such, still really current issues.
That's right. Now, the reason I asked you about his daughter is I just wanted to know if there were any grandchildren who are participating in this great celebration of his birthday.
Yes. So much has happened. Of course, the birthday was May 8th, and And I love hearing that you check our website regularly, which is trumanlibrary.org. I'm communications director, so I have to throw that out.
Do that. I was going to ask you to do that.
Right.
It is really, I didn't mean to interrupt you, Susan. It is a fantastic website. I mean, I cannot tell you. I mean, the others are very good, too. I check. I happen to be one of those people who likes Presidential Library websites. But the Truman website is absolutely great. I check it all the time. It's really great.
Oh, thanks
so
for saying
so. Go ahead and promote it.
Well, it was when it was launched about 10 years ago, it was an award-winning website. The look and feel is a little, you know, not necessarily 21st century. We're working on that. But the information that you can get, what is housed there, is just phenomenal. And millions of visitors from all around the world are referencing those materials just like yourself on a daily basis. So we're really pleased to be able to offer that to the public. So now, you know, researchers don't necessarily, like you mentioned David McCullough, he spent 10 years here in our research room working on that book and came to know Independence and before my time, I'm sort of sad to say, but came to know this Presidential Library really well. And now a lot of those research materials are available at trumanlibrary.org. One of the highlights of this birthday celebration was a fundraising gala called Wild About Harry. And Cokie Roberts gave a keynote, and Harry Truman's eldest grandson, Clifton Truman Daniel, who resides in Chicago, also offered remarks, and his brother Thomas was here in their families. And then some other really nice guests to have, the great-granddaughter of President Hoover, Margaret Hoover, was here with her fiancé for that event, and also Susan Ford Bales with her husband attended. So it was just a really terrific event.
Susan Ford, of course, being the daughter of President Ford.
That's right. Yeah, thanks for that clarification.
Yeah, no, I remember that. That she was a teenager in the White House, I think, right? And I recall from my history, didn't she have a big prom party in the White House? I recall that.
I know it shaped. In fact, she was on a path to be a photojournalist and went to KU, Kansas University, and it was just too hard. It was just too hard to be that 18 to 22-year-old and the president's daughter. So I think she stepped out of that arena and ended up studying with Ansel Adams and just went a different course because of the spotlight on her. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, with President Ford, there were many, many comparisons to President Truman in the sense that they both unexpectedly became president, you know, didn't plan it. They weren't planning the presidency as other people do. You know, I made me a list of things, and you brought up Israel, and that's one that I had not written down, but I just made me a list of things here that happened during the Truman administration. I mean, just some of the things. Of course, the ending of World War II, the atomic bomb, the post-war economy and how difficult that was politically for him, the CIA, the Korean War, the Truman Doctrine, which you know, really was our foreign policy doctrine until the collapse of the Soviet Union. He ended, and this is something that, you know, sometimes gets lost. He ended segregation, as you say, of the armed forces.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I didn't know that until I worked here. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. This is one of those. In fact, I saw on the Truman website, there was a copy of the executive order. That I saw.
Oh, and I have
course,
to say, great, just last year, it was the 60th anniversary of that executive order, and so... well, and also the 60th anniversary of recognizing Israel. 1948 was a big year for Harry Truman in the world. And on the homepage, folks can find links to an online exhibit about that decision to recognize Israel, which Michael Beschloss has said is one of the most courageous presidential acts in our history, and also an online exhibit about that desegregation process. Both of those, I remember Michael Beschloss saying, you know, people have this idea about history that the decisions were easily made, and both were really tricky and could have gone any direction. So they're both really good dramatic stories.
Absolutely. And the other one that was, as you say, a very difficult decision and an extremely unpopular decision, as I've read, the Berlin airlift in, what was that, 48 or 49 or something like that, when President Truman literally saved what was then called West Berlin.
Yeah, and you know, I'll defer to Bill on that history. I don't know that history very well, but one of the candy bombers, well, I should say one of the Berlin airlift pilots was here last year, and he was known as the Berlin candy bomber. He would see these little kids down there and decided, oh, I'm just going to drop a bag of candy. And it became this huge campaign. And it was so, it was, you know, one of those goosebump moments. I was in the gallery, and he was getting ready to step on stage, and a woman approached, and she had a, you know, she had a European accent, and she said, are you the candy bomber? She had been in Berlin and had seen a notice in the newspaper, just happened to live in the area, saw this notice and came. She had her passport, and they, you know, to be present for that connection was really something.
Well, Susan, I will confess, if you didn't figure it out from my blog, that I am a conservative Republican, but I'm also an American.
Mm-hmm.
And I have so much respect for President Truman. In fact, I often say, and, you know, Bill Katz, I think Bill is listening. Are you there, Bill?
Yes, I certainly am.
Yeah, and I know Bill and I, let me kind of bring Bill into the conversation a little bit. But Bill, I know you and I have spoken a couple of times about President Truman and what a great, all the great contributions that he made. The thing that I admire most about him, Susan, I mean, just putting politics aside, what I admire most about him is that he had to make some incredibly tough decisions at crucial moments in history, and he made the right decisions. And maybe they were not popular decisions, maybe they were difficult decisions, but he made the right ones. And he took a beating politically, but many of those decisions. But clearly, he made the right decisions. And I have so much respect for him, for that integrity and leadership that he had as a president. And we just, I mean, I just don't know what else to say other than that how grateful we were as a country to have had Harry Truman at that time.
Well, and since you brought up the family connection, I would love to share this, that Clifton, again, the eldest grandson, who is really the spokesperson now for his grandfather's legacy and with regard to the family. And I asked him recently, I said, what do you think your grandfather's greatest legacy is? Or, you know, what is the legacy? And he said, Grandpa might say it was the Marshall Plan or the Truman Doctrine, but I say it was upholding the ideal that an ordinary citizen can rise to the highest office in the land and through faith, loyalty, honesty, empathy, and determination, stand the world on its ear. And I think that's why we all love Harry Truman.
No, you're right, and I forgot about the Marshall Plan. There it is. I mean, I'm sure, Bill, you probably have a few more things, Bill, than I've made me a list here, and I forgot about the Marshall Plan. So that's another one that was a very tough decision, wasn't it, Bill?
Extremely tough. Actually, it also showed President Truman's graciousness. It was actually the Truman Plan.
Mm-hmm.
It was hatched in the White House, but President Truman at that time was not all that popular in the country, and he knew that it would get through Congress more easily if it had General Marshall's name on it. So he called it the Marshall Plan. But he gave the credit to General Marshall. If I can just an aside about the children that Susan is referring to, you may know, Sylvia, that I was on the New York Times, and President Truman's son-in-law, Clifton Daniel, was the executive editor of the New York Times, and very often Margaret Truman would come into the cafeteria with her children, the very children that Susan is talking about,
oh.
and have lunch like anybody else. And
that's amazing.
And people
Susan
would just...
I'm sorry, Bill. Go ahead.
No, people would leave her alone. You know, they respected her privacy. But she was the daughter of a president, and there she was in our cafeteria.
And she was also an author, Susan, wasn't she?
Yes. Yeah. In fact, her last mystery was published, I think, just months prior to her death. So, For those who like the good thriller, they've got a whole series from Margaret.
Didn't she do one or a thriller called Murder in the White House? Was that her book?
I don't remember.
I don't know if that's the
exact title, and I'm coming up blank on the last title too. But anyone who wants to Google Margaret Truman Daniel will find all of those, and they're all set in the Beltway. I believe.
Susan, one last point here. Maybe you can help us remember what happened. But what was the incident in Harry Truman's presidency where some reporter in Washington wrote something very unkind, I think, about his daughter? His daughter had a piano recital, I believe. And some, maybe Bill, you remember this.
Yes, I
don't remember the whole story, so maybe you two can help us understand it. But apparently Margaret Truman gave a recital in Washington, and some reporter just beat her up, and Truman got really mad.
He was really mad. I'm going to see if I can find that while we're speaking.
Yeah,
now,
Bill,
what I've heard.
That? Does Bill, do you remember
that
incident?
It was actually a voice recital. Margaret Truman was trained as an opera singer, and she gave a voice recital, and the music critic of the Washington Post, whose name was Hume, really slammed her. And President Truman wrote what apparently was a very passionate defense of his daughter. Now, there is some controversy as to whether he actually sent it.
I believe he did. And, you know, now, again, I don't know if I've got this completely straight, but his longtime friend from high school, one of his best buddies, who was his press secretary, had just dropped over dead. I think, I want to say the day prior, it was just right in that same period, Charlie Ross, right? Is it?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Am I remembering right?
Yes.
And so the normal controls over what went out, he skirted his communications crew. Well, but I had understood that it actually was posted.
Yeah, I just remember that story. There was also a great documentary about President Truman on American Experience. I don't know if you saw that. That was a great show as well, and they related that story, but I didn't remember all of the details.
Well, it was Susan, vitriolic, you'll need a beefsteak when I'm done with you. Yeah.
Well, but you know, we like that about people. You know, I mean, if you're willing to defend your daughter, I like that. Okay.
He was real, and you know, one of the things as the country praises Harry Truman, I think one of the things that we need to think about as a nation is would we elect a guy like that today? You know, the man who recognized the State of Israel was also someone who'd used some racial epithets in his lifetime. And, you know, that's also true for desegregating the U.S. Armed Forces. And he was a man who grew and changed. And I think that's one of the interesting questions that we're left with as we look at Truman's life. Do we allow our potential leaders to grow, develop, change, to maybe have... You know, said the impolitic thing occasionally. It's an interesting thing. I think one reason we like him so much because he's just so real.
Well, Susan, I'm going to thank you very much for joining us, and I would invite everybody to go to the website, to say the least. And I remember, by the way, reading that article about Israel last year. In fact, I have some family friends who are from Israel. And I sent them that particular article and the link to it, and they enjoyed it a great deal. And, you know, maybe we can ask Bill Katz this question later, but Bill, is this the reason why so many Jewish Americans are Democrats, because of that particular decision?
No, actually not. That legacy goes way back to the Roosevelt administration. And the first generations of Jews being immigrants to this country tended to identify with the more liberal political philosophy of the Democratic Party.
Oh, okay.
But President Truman's decision to recognize Israel is revered within the Jewish community because it was opposed by virtually all of his foreign policy advisors. And he overcame them, and he later said it was one of the most important things he did.
And what was, Bill, just as long as we're talking about that, what was the public reaction to that decision? I mean, was there a lot of controversy at the time?
Well, actually, there really wasn't. We had just fought World War II. People felt a certain sympathy for the Jewish refugees. The Arab world's image then was not particularly strong. And those people who were concerned about the Middle East tended to be the people who were most interested in establishing Israel. Within the administration, it was an extraordinarily controversial decision. And in fact, at one point, the Department of State attempted to override President Truman's instructions on how to get things done in the Middle East. So and there were people in the administration who accused President Truman of doing this for political reasons, but it wasn't for political reasons. There wasn't that much in it. The Jewish vote was already Democratic. He did it because he honestly believed in it. And also, he was a student of the Bible, and that meant a great deal to him.
Oh, okay, very good. I didn't realize that. Well, Susan, we're going to thank you very much for joining us today, and it's been very nice talking to you. And you're welcome to hang on and listen to Bill and I talk about President Truman, or if you have something else to do, you can listen to it later on that link that I sent to you. But I want to thank you very much.
It's been a pleasure. Nice to be on with you, Bill, also. And
thank you.
Thanks for making Truman the topic. And for those who are within a day's drive, the Truman Museum is a terrific way to get to know this man that you're discussing today. So you all be well, and we'll talk later.
So, Susan, I have one more question. I forgot to
sure.
Forgive me. He was a great piano player, wasn't he?
He was. Yeah. Isn't it said that if he hadn't gone into politics, he said he would have been a piano player at a house of ill repute. And he said it a little differently.
Yeah.
I think his mom was probably proud of the path he took.
Yes, I think so, and the rest of us are as well. Thank you very much, Susan, for joining us, and you're welcome to stick around. We're going to move on right now to our friend Bill Katz. Bill, to some extent, if I may say so, a little older than me, you may recall having lived in, if not directly the Truman years, certainly the aftermath of the Truman administration. But before we get to you, Bill, I wanted to bring in our friend Adriana and let her do her commentary because, let me put her on here for a second. So I'm going to ask you, Bill, to hold off there for a quick second, and you and I will come back and discuss the Truman presidency. Adriana, I haven't lost you. I'm trying to put you on here. There you are. Adriana, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Well, Adriana, for those of you who listen to the show regularly, Adriana was a delegate to the Republican convention last year, and she has been joining us on the show every time, and she does a commentary at the end of the show. But today, because of some time constraints, she's going to do it right now. So go ahead, Adriana, and do the presentation. And let's see. Let me put you back on. For some reason, forgive me here. There you are. You're on now.
Thank you.
So forgive me for messing it up, but you're on.
Thank you. Real integrity can have effect on our personal environment and those who come in and out of our influence, even though current culture explains away the concept of its relevance. It has been said that to be true to oneself is to have this quality. Some define this concept as an undivided completeness with nothing wanting, while others give the definition of integrity as the inner sense of wholeness. In any case, there is much more to this definition because of its effect on the inner peace of a person and moral righteousness that will affect every person that one comes in contact with. Harry Truman made tough decisions at the toughest moments, admitting, as his predecessor never did or could, exactly who Uncle Joe Stalin was and what he wanted, stopping him in Greece, pushing through the Marshall Plan to save Europe, and getting the money for it from a depleted American public, fighting a land war in Korea, all this when his exhausted nation, we had been through two world wars in 25 years, did not want another war and needed to be rallied. President Harry Truman was a great man, and I believe we also saw the makings of a similar greatness in George W. Bush, plain-spoken, originally inspiring man who, through a good heart and a good head, through God and character, simply well-meaningness and love of country is, in his own non-compelling way, doing the right tough things at a terrible time. And President Bush faces stakes as high as President Truman faced, if not as many things higher. Truman had to stand for freedom and keep the West together while keeping Stalin from getting and then using weapons that he could, in his evil, use to blow up half the world. President Bush had to stand for freedom and keep an alliance together while moving against a dozen madmen who have it within their power to deploy weapons of mass destruction that could blow up half the world. President Bush also followed a charismatic leader, and I do not mean President Clinton. President Clinton, who's 8 years in the presidency, could be compressed like an accordion into 1 inch of meaning, was not FDR. The charismatic figure President Bush followed is the last big American president, the last who had the massive presence of a battleship, President Ronald Reagan. People kept wondering if President Bush had in him to be a Reagan. I thought maybe he did. But now, I think Truman. Truman, Reagan, Bush were presidents with integrity. I'm sorry, I do not hold the same opinion of President Clinton. We all know he was unfaithful to his wife and family. How can a country trust a man while his own wife could not trust in his faithfulness? Well, Harry Truman did all through God and instinct and character and integrity. He was a good man who loved his country. He loved to read history and could quote Ovid. But he was not intellectual, not a man of a strictly original thought. His mind wasn't so much creative as quick and solid as a rock. He grew up into the job on a steep learning curve, forced by history to absorb facts and decide quickly. He didn't know about the atomic bomb until the first week of his presidency. President Bush has been on a similar step curve, and he was forced to absorb and decide quickly, and his decisions to seem to have been issued from a mind that quick and solid as rock. In the early days of different struggles, he immediately understood the situation. We are at war, but did not immediately strike back. He seemed at first, in the day after September 11, to have been as shocked by history as Harry Truman. The moon and the stars had fallen upon him. Honesty, integrity, fidelity are words that we hear people mention a lot. At least I do. I know we will all agree that integrity is a vital quality for a good leader to have. But how many leaders truly are people of integrity? That is a question we all need to think carefully about. I will encourage anyone in a position of leadership to ask themselves, how am I personally doing when it comes to displaying this quality of integrity? As leaders, we need to model integrity in all aspects of our lives, including our personal relationships with spouses, children, parents, best friends. If we are people of integrity in these most important and personal of relationships, how will be the persons of integrity in our business, politics, or other relationships? Let's remember to be leaders of integrity, model integrity, talk about integrity, and the benefits that come from developing and living this virtue. This is Adriana Boyne, and that was my opinion.
Well, thank you, Adriana. Thank you very much for that. That was very interesting, as always. Adriana, I think I mentioned to you, Bill, the last time you were on, that Adriana was a delegate to a Republican convention. She was one of the Texas delegates up there, and I'm sure she and her husband had a great time up in Minneapolis. But sort of moving, you have a political meeting to go to this afternoon, don't you?
Yes, I need to meet with Vice Chairman Dr. Robin Armstrong. He's the Vice Chairman of the Texas Republican Party, so I need to go because I need to meet
him. All right.
Now.
Well, have a good time. Say hello to everybody from me, and tell them that I think they're doing a pretty good job here in Texas. If Governor Perry shows up, tell him I like what he's doing.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay. All right, Adriana. Have a good day. Bill, I made me a list here of some of the things that Harry Truman had to go through. And some of these were very, very difficult problems. And maybe, you know, you recall, what two or three things stand out in your mind when you think of Harry Truman? If you were explaining, let's say, Harry Truman to a young man or a young woman, what things would come to your mind?
Well, I think first was the decision to use the atomic bomb. It was Harry Truman's decision, and not Franklin Roosevelt's. Obviously a very painful decision, and one for which Truman has been severely criticized by the Monday morning quarterbacks who weren't fighting in the Pacific. And, of course, it was that those two bombs did end World War II, and undoubtedly, as horrible as they were, saved the lives of millions of people. I don't think there's any question about that. The second thing that I would think about would be the 1948 election, and I think one of the things we really love about Harry Truman is that he would not accept defeat. Every major political writer in the country, every one of them, predicted that he would lose by a landslide. He would not accept it. He went across the country. He made his case to the American people, and they reelected him. And what many people don't realize today is he did it with a Democratic Party that was very, very hobbled. The Southern segregationists had walked out in 1948 and formed their own party, and there were Southern states that were traditionally Democratic that Truman did not carry in 48 because he would not back down on bringing the Democratic Party into the era of civil rights. Many people also don't realize that he also confronted the far left of the party. I wish somebody would do that today, by the way. But he basically told the far left, I'm sorry, I can only go so far in your direction and no further. And former Vice President Henry Wallace, who had been Vice President under Franklin Roosevelt and who Truman succeeded as Vice President, left the Democratic Party and ran against Truman on the Progressive ticket. So Truman was very hobbled in many ways in 1948, and he won anyway. I would certainly bring that up. I think the formation of NATO, which occurred in his administration, he, as you said earlier, Silvio, he formed the basis for the policies that won the Cold War. If there had not been a Harry Truman in the White House, I don't know if we would have won, because he set the tone of our relationship with the Soviet Union, which was a confrontational relationship, and properly so. And, of course, linked with the formation of NATO were other national security decisions he made. For example, he formed the United States Air Force, which many people don't realize. Before Harry Truman's time, it had been a part of the Army. He made it a separate service. And, of course, confronted communist aggression in Korea. You mentioned earlier the recognition of Israel, which was extremely important as a moral statement that we were not going to forget the legacy of World War II. I'd add one other thing, which I think was extremely important to the Truman administration and for which Harry Truman was absolutely despised, and that was his firing of Douglas MacArthur. Douglas MacArthur was a demigod in America. He was the five-star general, one of the architects of victory in the Pacific in World War II, and probably one of the most popular Americans. But MacArthur, who was commanding our troops in Korea during the Korean War, commanding United Nations forces, went outside the bonds, the bounds, rather, of a military man's duties, and he started commenting on foreign policy and disagreeing with his commander-in-chief. Truman realized that this could not occur. We have civilian control over the military, and he had the courage to fire one of the most popular men in American history. And the American people eventually came to agree with him. And
now,
those are the things I'd remember.
Yeah, just to refresh my memory a little bit, the firing of MacArthur was during the Korean War, right?
April of 1951.
MacArthur had made a statement about China, wasn't it?
MacArthur was in communication with Joe Martin, who was a Republican leader at the time, and was making statements saying he thought the war should be expanded, that he thought we should unleash Chiang Kai-shek, who was then barracked at Taiwan, Formosa, as we used to call it. And these statements ran contrary to the foreign policy of President Truman. And President Truman did seek the advice of some other military men who believed that MacArthur was becoming insubordinate. You cannot have a general who is insubordinate to the president. But MacArthur understood his own popularity. I mean, he was a legend in America, and he carried that popularity too far. And President Truman found it necessary to relieve him of his command. I remember that day, by the way. I was a young kid, very young, but I remember it. And all I heard around me was hatred toward Harry Truman, no understanding of the decision at all. And I remember going into school that morning and hearing it from a teacher that President Truman had fired General MacArthur. And I remember saying to the teacher, "That Truman!" I mean, everybody was angry at Harry Truman, but he stuck by his guns. MacArthur came back to a tumultuous hero's welcome. He had ticker tape parades everywhere. Harry Truman looked very small. But in the next year, MacArthur went around the country making speeches, and these speeches revealed his foreign policy views, and Americans came to disagree with MacArthur. And in the 1952 Republican convention, MacArthur wanted the nomination, and he got exactly one delegate vote. The nomination went to Dwight Eisenhower. So Americans eventually came to realize the wisdom of President Truman's decision.
Let me ask you about the Berlin airlift. I was watching a documentary recently on the History Channel, and about that. Susan mentioned a little bit about the candy bombers, but some historians have compared the Berlin airlift to the surge in Iraq in the sense that just like Bush didn't want to give up on Iraq, President Truman did not want to give up on West Berlin. What can you say about that?
Well, I think there is a lot of similarity in the sense that a lot of the advice Truman got was that the airlift would never succeed, that we simply could not supply a city by air. And he brought in the best logistical people in the Air Force, and they formed basically an air train that constantly brought supplies into Berlin. We lost a certain number of planes, not to enemy action, but to accidents, but that air train kept going 24 hours a day, and it did save the city. And eventually the Soviets backed down and opened up Berlin again. So here again was a case of the president asking for advice, but then keeping his own counsel and making his own decision. You know, Harry Truman once said something very interesting about experts. He said, you can't tell an expert anything because then he's not an expert anymore. You know, these guys all wanted to lord it over everybody, saying, we're experts. But he understood. He knew history. He borrowed more books from the Library of Congress than any other American president. And he knew that presidents occasionally have to go outside the usual area of expertise. And that's exactly what he did in Berlin. And, of course, he won.
Let me ask you a question about the Korean War. Obviously, that turned out to be a very unpopular war. But when we went into that war, am I correct in saying that President Truman did not have a congressional resolution, that he just sent the troops without going to Congress?
He did not. He used a United Nations resolution, which passed only because the Soviet Union was boycotting the United Nations at that time over some other issue. And there was a mechanism in the UN called Uniting for Peace. And there was this Uniting for Peace resolution authorizing the use of force to resist the aggression against South Korea. His first actions in Korea were actually mild. He committed only air and naval support. But it became very obvious very quickly that we needed ground troops. And President Truman did, in fact, commit ground troops to Korea without a war resolution. Now, I should point out that a declaration of war is actually quite rare. I think I read recently that no country in the world has actually declared war in the last 50 years. People kind of don't do it that way anymore. But there are two conflicting clauses in the American Constitution. One gives Congress the power to declare war, but it makes the president commander-in-chief of the armed forces. And it was under that power that he committed the troops. It was a very controversial decision. The American people did not like it. They didn't like the Korean War. It was a very unpopular war. But he made the decision, and I think history will record that he made a very courageous but very painful decision to resist aggression. That was the first time in human history, by the way, that aggression had been resisted under a common flag, which was the flag of the UN.
Now, when what we were trying to prevent, what President Truman was trying to prevent, was the expansion of China into Korea. Am I right?
Well, his first instinct was to resist the communist aggression. We knew that the Soviet Union was behind it. I am not that knowledgeable about what his attitude toward China was, you know, in the week that he made those decisions. But it was clearly a Soviet-sponsored invasion. They were using all Soviet equipment. Planes that were being flown were Soviet-supplied. And I think it was really his feelings about the Soviet Union, which at that time was under the control of Joe Stalin, that he saw this as a proxy war launched by the Soviet Union and realized it had to be resisted. It was very touch and go. We almost lost the Korean War. And ironically, it was thanks to Douglas MacArthur and his brilliant strategy in the first months of the Korean War that allowed us to turn it around.
One quick question about the CIA. The CIA was not created as a cabinet position, right? It was, created by executive order. Is that right?
No, it was created by the National Security Act of 1947. It was by congressional action, it was the theory behind the CIA was that we would have one central intelligence agency that would not be pursuing its own foreign policy, and that would be accountable only to the president. But it was created by law.
Okay. I wasn't sure about that. Well, Bill, I'm going to thank you a great deal for helping us understand. I thought it would be a very good material for the show because, of course, with Memorial Day coming up, I thought about looking back at some of our great war presidents, and you know, I thought Harry Truman would be a good one that I like.
Yes, very much.
It would be a good idea to have someone from the library, and I thought Susan's contributions were very interesting, and your
yep.
contributions, as always, Bill,
well,
are extremely interesting. It was kind of a funny day today because, you know, today was, of course, was the day that Dick Cheney and President Obama got into a almost a dueling speeches, as they say.
Remarkable. Absolutely remarkable.
Yeah, remarkable. I mean, I don't recall ever seeing that before in American history. And maybe, maybe Bill, we'll have you back next week and just talk a little bit about that. I'm fascinated to hear. I know you've written a couple of things today on Urgent Agenda.
Yes.
And maybe if we could, maybe next week, bring you back. I'll send you an email and try to arrange something and talk specifically about that. I'd really like to get your thoughts on it.
Be happy to do it.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Have a great Memorial Day weekend, and thank you very much for your posts on Urgent Agenda. It's always it's one of the first things I read every day. It's really a wonderful blog, and you should be very proud of it.
Well, thank you so much. Pleasure to
have
be with you.
Have a great weekend.
Same
My
to
pleasure,
you.
Bill.
Okay.
Have a great weekend.
Hi, same to you,
Bill Katz, and before that, Susan Medler of the Truman Library, as we look back at the life and presidency of Harry Truman right before Memorial Day. Thank you. Have a great weekend, everybody. Enjoy your Memorial Day holiday, and we will be back on the show on Tuesday. And I think on Tuesday, I'm pretty sure we'll be talking to Carlos Gallardo of the GOP here in Texas, and we'll be talking about the Republican Party and Hispanics. Have a great weekend, everybody, and we'll talk to you later. Thank you very much.